quiet, Cheyenne, on my mind. Could this be the end of Roe v. Wade? When Donald Trump ran for president, he promised to fill the Supreme Court with justices who would overturn the landmark decision. Now, with three of his appointees on the bench, the nation's highest court is poised to do just that. On Monday, the justices agreed to hear a case that strikes at the core of the precedent set by Roe back in 1973, that a woman has a constitutional right to an abortion. Mary Ziegler is professor of law at Florida State University. Her most recent book is titled Abortion in America, A Legal History, Roe v. Wade to the Present. She joins me to explain the legal question in front of the court and what abortion access would look like if Roe were struck down. Mary, this week the Supreme Court agreed to hear a case that could challenge Roe v. Wade. Tell me about this Mississippi law that is coming before the court.
Sure. So in 2018, Mississippi passed a law that banned most abortions at 15 weeks gestation, with certain exceptions for either health emergencies or what the state calls severe fetal abnormalities. And the theory underlying the law is that fetal pain is possible at 15 weeks. Now, just as a starting point, that's highly contested. Most other states that have abortion restrictions based on fetal pain don't even start until the 20th week. And most research would suggest fetal pain is impossible until the 29th or 30th week. But what's really salient about the case is that the Supreme Court has said you can't ban abortion before viability, which usually is around the 24th week, maybe 22nd or 23rd week with heroic medical interventions, but clearly not at the 15th week. So what's interesting or important is that for the court to uphold this Mississippi law, it would either have to overturn all of Roe v. Wade or at least the part of Roe v. Wade that says no bans pre-viability.
So what about heartbeat? Doesn't heartbeat come into question here as well?
Potentially, right? I mean, so if the Supreme Court is to get rid of the viability limit, one possibility or one question that would come up is, what is the limit? So if it's not viability, what is it? And the proponents of heartbeat laws are waiting in the wings to say, well, it's a heartbeat, because either, in their view, a heartbeat is viability, right? They would say at the point that you can detect a heartbeat or fetal cardiac activity, a miscarriage is much less likely, or in the alternative that a heartbeat is just a better alternative to viability. And so that's one possibility. Of course, the Supreme Court could come up with any other limit, right? They could say the limit is 15 weeks, or I mean, quite possibly they could say there is no limit and states can ban abortion, you know, whatever they want.
How soon is a heartbeat audible?
It's usually around 6 weeks gestation. It can sometimes be anywhere between 6 and 8.
I mean, and at that time, perhaps a woman doesn't even know she's pregnant.
Absolutely, yeah, especially for people who have irregular menstrual periods.
Exactly. What is the issue, the main question that the court is going to be dealing with?
I would say there are two questions. The question the court granted is it ever okay for states to ban abortion before viability? So they're certainly going to be confronting that, and they may be asking whether viability as a limit makes sense. And then a related question will be, if they think viability doesn't make sense, can you get rid of viability without the whole structure of abortion rights collapsing, right? And I mean, the Supreme Court may want it to collapse, right? But I mean, if they don't, the question may be, is there a way to have a right to abortion without the viability limit?
And what about questions of access?
Well, I think this is not so much an access case as a case really about the fate of Roe v. Wade. Obviously, if the Supreme Court says, okay, we don't worry about the viability limit anymore, that a lot of the kinds of limits on access we've seen would be much more likely to go into effect. So whether that's bans on particular procedures or bans on abortion earlier in pregnancy. But this is more a case in the kind of tradition of, are we going to have a right to abortion or not, than it is about access, which is one of the reasons why you see so much more panic about this case, really, on among progressives, because this is a much more direct strike at Roe v. Wade than anything we've seen since the 90s, I would say.
I gather Mississippi is not the only state pushing to get before the Supreme Court with its own case. So there are a whole range of states out there trying to get their cases up there.
Absolutely. So one, I'm watching, the Supreme Court already has a cert petition from Arkansas, a law banning abortion when a person realizes that a fetus or unborn child has Down syndrome. There are a whole bunch of laws like this, the so-called eugenic abortion laws. There's laws limiting access to medication abortion. There's laws limiting access to the most common surgical procedure after the first trimester called dilation and evacuation. There's lots and lots of stuff in the pipeline. And I think you're right to point that out, Diane, because it seems a little more likely to me that this Supreme Court will end up overturning Roe, but maybe take one or two cases to kind of set that up versus just doing it in one fell swoop. So we may be looking, I think, at the reversal of Roe more likely in 2023 or 2024 than in 2022. So it's worth keeping an eye on what else is in the pipeline, because those might actually be relevant to the ultimate fate of Roe too.
Has the number of abortions actually dropped over the last several years?
Yeah, so the number of abortions between 1973 and sometime in the 1980s went up almost every year, in part because the United States was just really terrible at birth control, right? I mean, kind of uniquely awful in the developing world. Not that the United States is, you know, blazing a trail of glory in that respect now, but it was really spectacularly bad for a while. As access to birth control improved and as new, more effective contraceptives, including emergency contraception, came on the market, and as abortion restrictions proliferated, the abortion rate has been declining year on year. We're not sure yet whether that's going to hold for 2020, in part because, you know, the pandemic that could cut either way, right? I mean, more people might have wanted abortions because of the pandemic, but also been unable to access abortions because of the pandemic. But the general trend line, if you take COVID-19 out of it, has been that the abortion rate has really been decreasing steadily for a long time.
And reasons for that?
It's hard to know. They're confounding variables. So anti-abortion folks think that it's because abortion is more and more restricted. Progressives tend to think it's because contraception is more and more available. The reality is that it's probably both. I think both things driving the rate down in the same way. But I think the other confounding variable is that there's not necessarily a really robust reporting requirement when it comes to abortion. So we're not 100% sure that we're even capturing the entire universe of procedures. But I think it's safe to say it's both regulating abortion and providing more people a way to prevent pregnancies in the first place if they don't want to be pregnant.
Were you at all surprised that the court took on this particular case?
Yeah, I absolutely was. I mean, one thing that was baffling was that the court has been sitting on this case since September. So I think you and I spoke about Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation, and the court has really been sitting on this case since then, which is weird to begin with, and usually wouldn't mean the court is interested. Usually that would mean the court is going to say no, and someone or several people are mad about that and writing angry dissenting opinions from the decision not to take a case. It was also surprising that it was this case, because most abortion restrictions that you read about are part of a national strategy. So there's some group in Washington, D.C. that has a big game plan, and multiple states will pass a law with the endpoint being a challenge in the Supreme Court. Banning abortion at 15 weeks was really kind of Mississippi's thing. There weren't a lot of other states doing that. So Mississippi was kind of an outlier. And that also made me think the court might not want to take it, that they would be more interested in one of the statutes that had been, you know, kind of carefully thought out by a national anti-abortion organization. So I think the fact that the court took this and took a case that kind of makes a direct hit suggests that this is a court that's ready to do something big on abortion, even if they don't have a kind of perfect test case queued up.
What about Amy Coney Barrett? What do we perceive or even glean from anything she said or done regarding abortion?
We don't really know. I mean, all we know so far is that the one thing the court has done on abortion since Amy Coney Barrett joined the court was to say that the FDA's current requirements on medication abortion, which make it harder for people to do telehealth abortion, that those should go back into effect. But we don't really know. Amy Coney Barrett didn't write anything. She just voted with the conservatives. We also know that there were at least 4 votes to take this Mississippi case, but we don't know who the 4 votes are. We can guess that it did not include any of the liberals or Chief Justice Roberts, but beyond that, we don't know. And we also would surmise that the 4 who voted to take it think they have a 5th, because there's no point in taking a case and then having the court strike down a law. That's just stupid if you're trying to kind of advance toward something like overturning Roe. But we don't really know where Justices Gorsuch, Barrett, and Kavanaugh are on this issue. I think it's reasonable to surmise that the conservatives on the court think they're all in lockstep, but we don't really know until we actually get an opinion whether Barrett is going to be kind of more in line with Chief Justice Roberts in the sense of rolling back abortion rights, but slowly and with some kind of like semblance of respect for precedent, or more like Justice Thomas, who's ready to overturn Roe v. Wade, you know, tomorrow with a lot of fanfare. It's safe to say, though, that Barrett joining the court made possible the court taking this case, whether or not she ultimately turns out to be an instantaneous vote to overturn Roe or not.
Can you imagine that these justices are talking with each other behind the scenes before they agree to take on that kind of case?
Absolutely. There had to have been a lot of wrangling behind the scenes because there's absolutely no reason it should take, you know, the better part of a year to decide to take a case or not, unless there's a lot of back and forth where maybe Chief Justice Roberts was trying to convince some of the justices, the 3 Trump nominees, not to take the case, and Justices Thomas and Alito were deciding, trying to convince them to take the case. There may have been politicking about how broad or narrow to go in the questions asked in the case, about how to resolve the case. We don't know what those conversations looked like, but pretty clearly there was a lot of back and forth going on. Otherwise, there's no way to explain the delay in the court's decision to take on the case in the first place.
So the court, as you see it, could overturn Roe v. Wade completely or peck away at it?
I mean, I think I would put it even more starkly than that, in the sense that to uphold this law, you either have to overturn part of Roe v. Wade or all of Roe v. Wade. Like, you can't uphold this law and leave Roe v. Wade alone. There's just no way to do that. So either what the court would have to do is say, okay, we've thought about it, and this whole viability thing is not an essential ingredient in Roe. It's, you know, doesn't make sense, and it's extraneous, so we're going to cut that away, and we're going to still say there's a thing called Roe, and all it means now is a right to choose abortion, you know, at some point, right? I mean, maybe you can still ban abortion earlier in pregnancy or whatever, but basically it would either have to be transforming what we mean by Roe or just getting rid of Roe. There's no way other than that to uphold this law.
Where could that lead us? I'm thinking about RU486, mm-hmm. morning after pills, contraception. Where does that leave us?
It's not clear at this point. I mean, I certainly think that's on the radar in the sense that states that ban abortion are going to get to define what they mean by abortion. And many people who are opposed to abortion include some common contraceptives. They view them as abortion, right? So certainly the morning after pill or emergency contraception or IUDs would all fall in that category. Less likely that you would see, you know, the birth control pill or like condoms or something like that. That's probably not coming anytime soon, because most people who are opposed to abortion don't think those drugs act as abortifacients. I think certainly there are lots of people who are opposed to abortion who are opposed to things they would view as contraceptives, not abortifacients, because they think that those drugs create what they call a contraceptive mentality, meaning essentially that, you know, people have sex because contraception is available in ways that these people think is inappropriate, right? Whether it's, you know, sort of sex outside of marriage or sex when you're a teenager. And so the thought is that if you didn't have contraceptives available, or you only had natural family planning, as they would call it, or like the rhythm method, then you would have people making better sexual decisions. Do I think that that's going to happen anytime soon? Not really. I think if anything, if Roe is gone, we would see more of a doubling down on the abortion issue itself. Because you have to remember that getting rid of Roe doesn't criminalize abortion nationwide. It just allows states to do that if they want to. But if you're a person in the Right to Life movement, that's not what you want, right? You think that a fetus or an unborn child is a rights-holding person, and you think that if a woman gets an abortion in California or New York, that's murder, just as much as if a woman in Alabama gets an abortion. So you're not going to be happy with letting states decide. So what we're already seeing, people in the anti-abortion movement sort of getting in position to argue that the Constitution protects fetal rights and therefore that abortion itself is unconstitutional. So I think what we'd be looking at is, you know, a few years down the road, if the court does overrule Roe, I would expect to see abortion opponents suing in states like California and New York, arguing that their laws are unconstitutional and violate fetal rights, and see that potentially be taken up by the Supreme Court.
So that gets into all kinds of legal questions. If you identify a fetus as a human being.
Yeah, I mean, that's one reason I don't know if the court would want to go there, because I think one of the arguments you see anti-abortion folks making to overrule Roe is essentially to go to the court and say, do you really want to do this anymore, right? Do you really want to be here every couple years talking about abortion and having protesters outside the court and having all the drama that surrounds Roe? If you get into, you know, saying that an unborn child is a person, you're going to be in the business of dealing with a lot of stuff, right? I mean, what does it mean if an unborn child is a person in tax law? What does it mean in tort law? What does it mean? And so I think a lot of justices who may find it appealing to not have to deal with abortion cases anymore might find it unappealing to have to figure out what fetal rights mean across a whole range of legal areas. So, I mean, I'm a little skeptical that even if this court does overturn Roe, that the justices would then want to pivot and immediately recognize fetal rights. I don't see that happening, but, you know, I was surprised the court took this case from Mississippi, so I could be wrong.
More of my conversation with Mary Ziegler when we come back.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily. Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Mary Ziegler, professor at Florida State University, who specializes in the legal history of reproduction. What do the polls tell us today about how many Americans favor the right to abortion?
Well, so there are large supermajorities who favor the idea of a right to abortion, and there are large supermajorities who like the idea of keeping Roe. The irony, I think, is that Americans sort of like where we are now, which is to say there's a big drop-off in support for abortion the later in pregnancy an abortion gets. And there's a fair amount of support for restrictions on abortion as long as those restrictions don't amount to outright bans. So, for example, lots of Americans don't mind waiting periods. They don't mind limits on abortion funding. They don't mind restrictions on specific procedures. And they don't like later abortions. So this sort of weird mishmash of there is a right to abortion, but access is limited is something a lot of polling suggests Americans like. But that said, if the Supreme Court overturns Roe, or ushers in bans on abortion early in pregnancy, that would be really unpopular. And we would probably expect to see a backlash because people really don't like the thought of criminalization, which is what we would see if Roe was gone.
What do we have in terms of where these rules against abortion are coming from. Is it mostly southern states?
Abortion restrictions are coming disproportionately from the reddest of red states, I would say, with the exception of there's more hesitation in the Rocky Mountain West and the Southwest, even in red states, than there would be in the South and the Midwest. So, you know, you're thinking of places like Iowa, like Alabama, and that it's not uniform, right? So swing states in the South and Midwest are not passing as many abortion restrictions and probably would not be expected to criminalize abortion in the post-Roe world. But it definitely is a regional story.
Tell me what happens then if the court decides to overturn Roe?
Well, we would expect to see a kind of, the New York Times had a very helpful map about this, which I think is just the tip of the iceberg. But essentially, you would expect to see sharp differences between states in access to abortion. A number of states, roughly half, maybe a little bit fewer than half, depending on the estimate, would ban all or most abortions. There would be a lot of money poured into the swing states to determine whether they would allow abortions or not. And I think that would be even more true in states that are sort of regional outliers, like Minnesota or Florida, where you would have a lot of people traveling from out of state to try to seek abortions if the neighboring states all criminalized the procedure. I think you would see a pretty robust black market take place for abortions. And that's especially true because unlike in the 60s and 70s, we now have medication that serves as an abortifacient. You mentioned RU486. I think we would expect to see nationwide networks supplying RU486 to people, even in states that ban abortion. I think you would see probably ongoing efforts in the states and in Congress, and I think a pressure to potentially reform the Supreme Court. There'd certainly be a lot more pressure on President Biden to do something on the abortion issue than there has been to date. And I think the biggest thing to remember is that it wouldn't be over, right? I think that we've thought so long about will Roe v. Wade be overturned or not that the end of Roe sort of seems like, you know, the end of the story. And that's almost certainly not going to be true in any domain, right? When it comes to the Supreme Court, when it comes to Congress, when it comes to the states, when it comes to, you know, your own state constitution, this battle will rage on really regardless of what the Supreme Court says.
On all the big questions that the court has to deal with, we're always wondering to what extent the justices pay attention to public opinion. Mm-hmm. And as you suggest, overwhelmingly, public opinion is in favor of leaving abortion the way it is. Mm-hmm. Hopefully few, but necessary.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think the answer is it depends, right? So we have some reason to think Justice Roberts pays attention to popular opinion because more than his colleagues, I think he's acutely aware of his reputation and the court's reputation, the court's institutional legitimacy, and what the court's legacy and his legacy will be. And it's not an exaggeration to say if this court overturns Roe v. Wade, that will be this court's legacy. I mean, no one will remember 50 years from now anything else that they've done other than overturn Roe v. Wade, if that's what they do. But not all of them care about that, right? I mean, quite clearly, Justice Thomas doesn't care about that. And Justice Thomas, if he has an audience, it's sort of people who think like him, whether those are lawyers or, you know, not, right, political operatives. And we don't really know, right, what the three Trump nominees think. I think everyone feels, whether they're correct or not, that Brett Kavanaugh cares about popular opinion up to a point, because he's always been part of the legal elite, right? I mean, he taught at Yale. So he's conservative, but I think he was someone who wanted to be liked by the legal elites across the ideological spectrum, which would translate to some degree caring about popular opinion. But I think we'll really have to wait and see, because the court, I think, is uniquely accountable to the public when it comes to abortion. Because if we're being honest, Diane, most people don't pay attention to the Supreme Court most of the time. They have no idea what they're doing. They don't understand most of the issues. So the court can do all kinds of stuff without a lot of public accountability because no one is watching very much. But that's certainly not true when it comes to things like guns or affirmative action or Roe v. Wade. And so it's really only then that we can tell whether the court cares what the public thinks, because those are the only times the court knows it can't get away with it, basically.
Take us back, Mary. This law has been controversial right from the start, and people have said there are really no grounds for this law.
Yeah, well, Roe has always been controversial. I think, again, kind of across the ideological spectrum, Ruth Bader Ginsburg famously argued that there would be less controversy about abortion if the court had used equal protection, basically focused on the idea of equality for women rather than privacy, which is what the court ultimately ended up doing in Roe. Of course, abortion opponents have been skeptical of Roe, too. And so I think it's fair to say that people have long criticized the reasoning of Roe. I think sometimes we overstate why or how much that's mattered, I think, to the controversy. I think sometimes you'll see both anti-abortion folks and pro-choice folks saying, if Roe were a better decision, we wouldn't be fighting about this. I think that's completely naive. I think the reason we're fighting about this is because people on both sides really care deeply about abortion, and they would be fighting about it if the Supreme Court had written the most brilliant gem of legal reasoning in history or not. But I think it is true that because of these longstanding criticisms of Roe, it is more susceptible to rethinking than some other precedents might be.
You wrote recently in The Atlantic that overturning Roe is just the beginning. What do you foresee?
Well, so the anti-abortion movement, both before and after Roe, has talked a lot about, oh, Roe is anti-democratic, Roe is judicial activism, but that was always really just a strategy. Anti-abortion leaders don't care about, you know, letting the states decide what they want to do. All you need to know is the name of the movement. It's called the Right to Life movement. And recognition of a right to life would, of course, go much further than overturning Roe. It would mean that no one anywhere could have a legal abortion. And as I wrote in The Atlantic, there's already been lots of murmurings about this within the anti-abortion movement. So leading anti-abortion theorists in the magazines like First Things have been arguing that it's time to start asking the court to treat a fetus or an unborn child as a person and to say that abortion is unconstitutional everywhere. And so we're probably going to see arguments like that made in the Dobbs case, and we're certainly going to see more and more arguments like that going forward, because I think anti-abortion groups believe that sooner or later the Supreme Court will ban abortion for everyone.
So do you see the court taking up fetal personhood in this case?
No. I mean, I don't think they have the votes. I mean, I would be... It really depends on Amy Coney Barrett. My guess would be there may be three or four votes max for that kind of approach, but it's really hard for me to see them getting to 5 votes on fetal rights right now. The reason that still matters, though, is that if there are 3 or 4 votes for fetal rights, then that means that things like, you know, Justice Breyer's retirement or not, and the next Supreme Court justice could be a really big deal. Because if, let's just say hypothetically, that Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito might be, I think, possible votes for fetal rights, I think Neil Gorsuch might be, I think Amy Coney Barrett might be. I'm not confident about the last two, but it just, supposing they are, then that means we could be one vote away from a court that would say they're fetal rights.
Finally, with the current makeup of the court, where do you see abortion access in this country in the next 5 years?
Well, it'll almost certainly get worse in the next 5 years. I think the only thing to remember is you look at this historically, winning in the Supreme Court on abortion is not necessarily the best thing for a social movement. So if you look at the pro-choice movement after Roe, a lot of complacency set in, a lot of fundraising went down.
there was a lot of kind of what I almost sort of strategic laziness that led to really devastating defeats like the Hyde Amendment. And then, of course, the anti-abortion movement went from being this sort of ragtag state-by-state thing into a national powerhouse that plays a dominant role in GOP politics. And so I think progressives should remember that losing a really big case like this in the Supreme Court can be a blessing in disguise in terms of energizing your movement, in terms of getting, you know, making, giving you the opportunity to have your own framework for abortion rights that isn't Roe, so you can be starting on fresh and not having to defend the things about Roe people don't like. It'll probably affect the 2022 and 2024 races, depending on the timing of a decision. And so I think sometimes the backlash to a decision like this can be kind of a jumpstart for organizing for a social movement. And I would expect to see that going forward too. So while states will be limiting access, I think the pushback from reproductive rights and reproductive justice organizers will be much more intense than anything we've seen to date.
We should say the court won't address this issue until October of 2021. We're likely not to know anything before June of 2022,
exactly.
Correct?
Yeah. I mean, so the earliest we would see Roe being overturned would be June of 2022. And again, Diane, I think it's quite possible that this is going to be a process that takes one or two decisions. So it's also possible that Roe could be overturned in 2023 or 2024. And I mean, of course, the great irony would be that 2023 is the 50th anniversary of Roe, so it may be right around then the decision is gone.
Before we close, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I think just to remember that this isn't over. I think that there's a lot of, for people who are really either people who are opposed to abortion or people who are in favor of abortion rights, this feels like we're coming to the kind of the end of the story, and it's really just the closing of one chapter and the start of another. So I think it's important to remember that there will be a probably pretty, I would argue, more intense abortion conflict if Roe is gone, and it'll be very hard to predict how that conflict goes.
Mary, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
That was Mary Ziegler, professor of law at Florida State University. Her most recent book is titled Abortion in America, A Legal History, Roe v. Wade to the Present. And that's all for today. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Lansberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineer today is Michael Kidd. Thanks for listening, all. Stay well. Be safe. I'm Diane Reed.